Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Looking at Lemon, Transforming Life Through Literature is a series of events focusing on the life and work of Lemon Anderson, a writer, performance artist, screen actor, and Tony Award-winning poet. Anderson is also a three-time felon who grew up in Brooklyn, the child of heroin-addicted parents who died of AIDS before he was 15, leaving Lemon an orphan teenager fending for himself. A high school dropout who spent years in jail and on probation, his attempts at rehabilitation faltered until he attended a poetry reading and found a sense of purpose in the art of words. The series celebrates Lemon's ability to find meaning in his life, discover healing in creative work, and transform pain into art. He joins us in Studio A this morning to talk about his life and work and about the series of events that will be happening in the Capital Region. Lemon Anderson, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure. An honor to have you here. We also welcome Kim Engel, our good friend, Assistant Director of UAlbany's Performing Arts Center. And Kim, always nice to have you
as well. Thank you,
Joe. Actually, why don't we start with you, Kim, of how this all came about?
Well, this all came about when I saw Lemon perform in New York City this past winter. I saw him perform County of Kings, his work, as he was passing it off to the actor who now performs the work. I met Lemon's manager in the audience, and we had a chat, and from there, things just blossomed. We decided to bring Lemon here to town for a few days. We decided to have his stage performance here, and we've also screened the documentary about Lemon for the past couple of weekends. In addition to that, Lemon's been at Albany High for the past couple of days working with the students there. So there's been a lot going on about Lemon.
I've been passing the high school on my way into work, and I've been seeing their welcome signs, and it seems like a great thing. What has that experience been like going into the high school and spending a somewhat extended period of time with the kids?
Well, teaching is a noble job, you know. I love it. I've been teaching as long as I've been performing. That's how I survived and paid the bills while I learned.
The arts doesn't do that? Yeah.
You learn how to roll dice as you go along because it's all a gamble. But teaching became a part of it, and I've learned how to do it well, and I've learned how to build really strong curriculums in the classroom, and I still do it, and I think I'm going to do it probably forever. Even if I'm doing arts or commercial work, it's still something I love to do.
Right.
I believe in coming in as the experience, not only as an educator, but as the experience at working, having a working experience, a current working experience for the students to really touch and feel. And somebody's actually working out there and coming into the classroom is a benefit for the classroom, and being proactive about supporting the teachers that are there as well and their curriculum. So I love it. I love being in, showing up.
How important do you think it is for the kids to know your backstory? I mean, obviously what you're teaching them and what you're telling them is important. Do you feel that at some point it's good to put it into a context of this is what I've been through that got me here? Or can you just work on the message alone?
No, I would rather focus on learning. I would rather focus on the curriculum and writing and teaching them how to write and design their own stories and not focus on my own. Obviously, everyone knows my story in the classroom by the time I get there.
Right.
And it's not about that. I'm learning how to really walk into rooms that are not urban and not struggling students in their environment. I think what struggle is a feeling and an emotion, like pain is. And so I don't really want to segregate the struggle of a kid from Brooklyn, New York, to someone who's probably dealing with a family who's well off, but they're going through divorce. I think pain is still pain, and I want to help a young person shape that pain and design that pain and maybe free it from themselves through writing.
So tonight, they're going to be having an evening with Lemon Anderson at the University Art Museum at 7 o'clock. So what will happen? What will you be doing tonight?
Some old, some new, some black, some blue, you know? Really, it's just, I don't really know. I kind of feel out the room. I've been doing this a long time, and it's a bit of speaking and poetry and engaging the community and having a Q&A. Q&As are really important for me because it allows me to really get in touch with the audience and talk to them about what they might need or what questions they might want answered. About their relationships to young people, their relationships to writing, their relationships to voice and style, and maybe something I couldn't bring up in the poems I read or the speak, the speaking that I provided, something else might be missing and they might want to ask that. So it's a combination of those three.
What kind of questions do you get typically?
It depends. If it's about the documentary, they want to know what happened to the relationships they saw in the documentary, right. Some of the characters, and if I still have relationships with them. If it's about writing, they want to know where I'm at now as a writer, what's new, what am I working on. And maybe as a voice in the community, they want to know how they can help other young folks, or how we can work together to find the right, you know, way of mentoring young people. I'm highly supportive of teachers and mentors. So,
yeah. Was that the difference for you?
Yeah, big time. I had really great teachers and mentors. I mean, I really did. Even when I was incarcerated, I had great correction officers who would put a book on my locker, and it would just be an anthology on, you know, whatever the subject, like New Eurekan voices, and anthologies were really helpful. And if it wasn't for that correction officer, and then when I read it and finished it, the correction officer would come back with a box of lo mein as a reward. And so I had, you know, those kind of relationships. So I highly support this mentorship.
Does the correction officer give that book to everyone, or is it just the person that he sees promise of someone who he believes will pick it up?
A little bit of both. I think correction officers believe they can save everyone. The right one, you know, the right correction officers,
sure,
believe like they could just come into the job and save everyone and plant the seed. Some of them are highly religious, and they come in off a church Sunday and say, "All right, you know, this is what I learned yesterday." And I've had those kind of correction officers, and I also had correction officers who had strong military backgrounds, and so they come in with discipline, and they teach me how to just fold my socks and line them up in the locker. When my mother wasn't alive to teach me that, or my father didn't have the strength to.
But it seems like it's a lot on you to pick up that book and to read it and digest it and to understand it and to
absolutely
think more about it.
I mean,
there is a point where it's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it definitely had a lot to do with who I was as well. I didn't have the comfortness that some of the other inmates had when I was young and incarcerated. No one came to visit me. You know, I didn't have parents or family members coming to visit me. All my friends had visits, and they were friends back then. They aren't friends anymore. But, you know, there's a sense of comfortness when your family comes to visit you, and outside they don't want to see your face. And so I noticed that men became comfortable being in prison, and I didn't. I didn't have that. And so I wanted to escape this incarceration, and I knew that it would only happen if I committed to action.
How long were you incarcerated?
Altogether 3 years.
Yeah.
From 16 to 20 in between.
Which is arguably the most, like, mm-hmm, transformative years from childhood to adulthood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I also spent time in Ohio, which is very different from the New York community. So I had a sense of what the country was like from being in middle, you know, in the Midwest, especially Ohio.
Right.
So it's like...
So when you got out, were you in Ohio? I mean,
My last time I spent in... incarcerated was in Ohio. Yeah.
And then, so do you re-enter society there, or do you come back to
New York? No, I came back to New York.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up back in Ohio, because I forgot to go back to court in Ohio. So they came to New York, and when they came to New York two years later, I was an actor, and I worked at a community center working with young people. So the community center got involved in getting me back home.
So from the time you got out, mm-hmm, it was pretty quick that you were going to start, I mean, you said this a moment ago, that you were going to start teaching and sharing,
mm-hmm,
your experience.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the impetus for that? At what point did that become important to you?
When I seen the community stand around me, right? It's when I left Ohio at 19 and I went to work at the community center in Brooklyn, it was a poetry reading that landed me a job in the theater troupe that was a part of the community center. But I noticed that there were really great people in the community center. It was just not being a part of the theater troupe. It was the guy who was working. Who worked on the environment. You know, he was social justice guy. You know, and then it was the woman who taught leadership. And it was the other guy who gave out jobs in the union, in the carpentry union. It was like a whole village. You know, I was a part of that. And I was not only inspired by theater and art, but inspired by humanity and great, you know, social justice, really. I mean, that's really what it was. But they all got together. And so when the warrant came for me, and the bounty hunters came to get me, and they got me in Brooklyn. This community didn't back down. They went to get their young person, and I was 19, 20, going on 20, and they went to Ohio. They flew out to Ohio to represent me, and that said a lot about what I've done in that community, because obviously they were standing on the work I've done with young people, and I had a really great relationship with young people because I was very close to their culture and their language and their anger and those...
And their age.
Yeah, in their age, yeah. So when they stood up for me, I knew that I was going to go back to a really great community, and in turn, I gave my all to growth. So I left that community center and began studying theater at NYU. So I took my AmeriCorps grant, which was, I had two, so I had $10,000. And I took up all the classes I needed at NYU. I didn't really need, you know, math or science. I just took up all the theater classes. So I took up voice. I took up writing, song composition. I took some basic acting classes just to get better. And then I landed a Broadway gig 2 years later. On deaf poetry.
You mentioned the word in working with these kids of relating to the anger. Talk about, I'm always fascinated about anger as something that is both fuel and also can suppress many of us and hold us back. But you were able to, you can still find a, we talk about this even with comics, where there's that finding the balance of the use of that rage, of that anger that you have.
I have a sensitivity that's pretty rare because of my father. My father was a Norwegian merchant marine who struggled with epilepsy because of his bout with depression and his experience in Vietnam, and all he had was poetry. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up with this sensitivity to words and him as well. You know, I saw my father only, just escape in the poems and not necessarily in raising me. So I had a place to go. I had a place where the energy went. I had a place where the anger went when I found poetry and the scars, where I couldn't find that in rap music. And so I don't recommend rap music as much to young people as I recommend other art forms, which is drama, watching television, watching a lot of good drama is really good, and giving them the first seeds to get them to the theater, because to me the theater is the greatest place for that anger to go. It's just a place where you can see scarred characters, and we don't see that too much. Everyone's so polished in music nowadays, and children escape to music, which is not the place they should escape nowadays to. So I highly recommend that they find other ways of escaping that energy, you know? The art is so important, and the performing arts has a place for young people to go.
And I don't mean to oversimplify this, but in that escape, obviously the drugs become a part, and certainly with your parents too, you know, the drugs become a way of medicating yourself to not feeling that rage and the anger. And how do you look at that and say, okay, here are your choices. This is a better one.
You know, every child is different. Every young person is different. And you have to really understand that. I try to really understand that when I'm in the room, when I'm speaking. And so...
That's why I asked you before, because you seem open to it. And what I'm curious about is, how do you get to the kid who may not be open to it because they've not... You even had that connection with your father. So you knew that it was a possibility. Mm-hmm. So how do you, if that hasn't been there, then how do you plant that seed and let it grow?
Patience. Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do, I'm putting myself in the mentorship role again. And so when I work with young people, I struggle with kids in Ivy League schools.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, it's not just kids who are coming from the ghetto, but kids who are coming from these schools and their parents are well off. It's just really about having the kind of patience with them. And eventually you hope that they find it themselves, but you can only be their friend. You know, I try to just hang around them and stay cool with them. And sometimes I don't have the time to be with them as much as they would like, because they created a great bond with me. I have a young person now at Dartmouth who I'm close to. And I'm, you know, teaching him to not be so urgent about change happening. You know, he just wants it now. He wants the opportunity to be great now. And because greatness is so popular now, you know, the hashtag popularity contest is everywhere, right?
Right.
And my job is to just teach him that this is going to be a long ride, but it's worth it because, you're like I was saying earlier in the green room, it's about the marathon and not the 50-yard dash, and you want that. So I try to deal with each child individually, and you can't win them all, but you can try to plant the seed and hope that, you know, what the correction officer did for me is just put a book on top of the locker and say, this is the book that really changed my life.
Yeah. How old are you now?
40.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I'm in my 40s. So, I mean, like you, at that point, we start to understand mm-hmm. patience.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to...
Yeah. But the mentor has to be patient, not the young person. Right? Yes. You know, the mentor has to be there. Because even when I was at the community center, I should have been fired 5 times from my job.
Why?
Because I was still young and fast, but they were patient enough to deal with me. I mean, they were also a community who really embraced an early meditation in their philosophy.
But they were patient.
They were patient.
They were
really
patient.
Yes, I'm still close with them now. There's a transition and a succession that's happening now with my generation from that community center is now taking over.
Yeah, which is really great to see. I mean, that's what you want.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, it's. So, yeah, I think the patience has to be there. I think sometimes we get frustrated even as parents. We want it now. We want our children to change now. We have no idea what kind of world they're dealing with. It's so fast-paced and different. It's so digital that the culture is so fragmented in many different ways, and we didn't come from that. At least I didn't. As fragmented as it is now, I don't even know what music they're listening to engage them with art and music. But I definitely, and I'm from the theater world, and it worked for me, so I highly recommend a place where you can put the phone away just for 2 hours and watch mm-hmm. something happen. And hopefully something close to home like County of Kings next week. It's that kind of show. I wrote the show for that child to see something that's quick and fast and hip and hop and urban and cultured and in their vein, right? Because I built the show for kids and it eventually ended up on an off-Broadway stage like the Public Theater, it works. So it has a level of production as well as in intimacy and relationship to their generation.
County of Kings will be taking place next Thursday, November 13th at 7:30. Lemon Anderson tonight at 7 o'clock at the University Art Museum. Kim Engel, who is the assistant director of the UAlbany Performing Arts Center. So a lot going on through this series, Transforming Life Through Literature. What else should people know about?
Well, the 2 screenings of the documentary have already taken place, but the DVD is available, so people can still get to see that.
Which is great, by the way.
Yeah, right. Really Lemon's book, County of Kings, is available in our campus bookstore as well as other places. That's a fine read. And coming to the performance, it's definitely one to see. Definitely one to see.
Yeah, let's finish this conversation tonight. It would be great to finish this conversation because I'm really curious about what other folks from the community want to ask. You know, I just feel like, especially with the documentary, which is the post incarceration life of Lemon Anderson as an artist and as a parent, and the struggles that I had to deal with as an artist and as a parent, and being on Broadway and then losing my job. So the documentary covers that. So it's a, you know, this journey is all peaks and valleys. You know? So let's hopefully finish that today.
Looking at Lemon, Transforming Life Through Literature is a series of events, and an evening with Lemon Anderson taking place tonight at 7 o'clock at the University Art Museum in Albany. Also, a performance of Lemon Anderson's County of Kings next Thursday, November 13th at 7:30 in the UAlbany Performing Arts Center. You can find out more by going to albany.edu, albany.edu. Lemon Anderson and Kim Engel, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. Great pleasure to have you both here.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Honor. Thank you. We post all of our segments online, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.